Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome in. You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We are just kind of winging it tonight because Mother Nature said absolutely not. There will be no baseball tonight. So here we are. The bullpen gets an extra day of rest. That's the good news. The bad news for the bullpen, it's a doubleheader tomorrow. I haven't seen a roster move, but I would think they're bringing up, although I did see that they updated the starter, so I'll get caught up on that in a second. We're going to do some live Q&A, so if you're on the apps right now and you want to just throw questions at us, we'll answer as many as we can. I know the DMs are down, so I'm not sure if this could be affected as far as Twitter goes, but we will see. We will start, however, with Alex Cora. And Jeremy, what were your thoughts on, because you haven't been on in a handful of days, so he didn't have a good week.
No, I mean, he goes to his daughter's graduation, which in my mind was okay. And then I found out that it was at an AM thing and the game was at night. I'm a family man. I have to make decisions with work all the time that give time to my family or vice versa. And it can oftentimes be a very difficult decision. You just don't see that much in baseball, from a manager's perspective. And then he promptly gets run, really at not his fault. You know, I would make an argument, not really Buehler's fault either, but regardless, he gets run, destroys the bullpen phone, and he effectively managed 3 out of 18 innings. And then the crochet start, what are we doing? What are we doing? Hadn't we been talking the whole, like, that whole series about how beat up the bullpen was? And we're like, I'm sitting there watching the game, and I'm like, all right, he's going to get through six. Maybe if he has a quick inning here, he can get a couple outs in the seventh. And then the next thing you know, he's coming out at 85 pitches. I was blown away by it. I still am. And I understand the commentary that's come out since, which is, well, this was a planned short, you know, outing for him. So essentially, you care more about Crochet and his health than you do about anybody in the bullpen. Because you're putting their health at risk to take a healthy player who's on his regular rest. And I understand the huge contract. I understand he's your ace. I understand what you're trying to do. But at the same time, there's no balance. The bullpen was beat to hell. I would have liked to see him. He got the first out. I don't know why you don't let him go get the second and third out, especially if he can do it in an order. You're probably at 92 to 95 pitches, and then you can give Hendricks the clean seventh. That's my take on it. But I want to say one more thing, Terry. I'm sick and tired of Alex Cora managing the whole thing like it's just one of 162. There's no urgency to win the game that's going on in the moment. And I think that it's getting into the players because the players aren't playing with any urgency. You're always a reflection of your leadership, always, from running a business, from running a little league team, whatever it may be, a big league club. You're a reflection of your leadership typically. And this lack of urgency is in my opinion, subtly one of the large reasons why we're a sub 500 team. And you obviously would blame Cora for that.
It's funny because the Red Sox are like the most well-rested non-playoff team of the decade. We rest, and then we get the whole month of October back off. You don't have to play in October, and that's the grand prize. And yeah, Johnny's in the chat.
That would make me laugh.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, is Alex Cora a bad manager? No, not necessarily. Has he gotten a lot out of a poorly constructed team in past years? Yeah, I would say he would. But I think all managers run their course at some point. I don't think it's a coincidence that Francona won in his first year. John Farrell won in his first year. Alex Cora won in his first year. I just think when new leadership comes in to the dugout, not necessarily the front office, I just feel like there's a new energy and a new focus. Last season, the Guardians weren't high on anybody's radar, and Francona stepped down. He took at least a year off, I think. And then Stephen Vogt took over, who was a former catcher, only recently retired. I don't even think he's 40. And, you know, they win, 93, 94 games and went to the ALCS. So I think they all run their course. And it's the first of year of his deal. So, I mean, he's not going anywhere, but this has been a very turbulent year, and you know, for a lot of reasons, and it's a mystery as to how he and Breslow are getting along right now. And there's a lot of evidence to suggest they're not getting along too well, but I don't know what you do. It just, everything is malfunctioning in every aspect of the organization.
I mean, look, the only set it and forget it are the top three. Duran's going to be in left. Devers is going to be the designated hitter. And Bregman's going to hit third. Everything else is completely in flux. So Abreu could hit fourth, could hit fifth, could hit sixth. He's going to be in right field. You know, Campbell, we already talked about that last week. It's all over the place. Consistency is another issue. And in a sport where you're essentially doing the same thing over and over again, I wonder how those players that are being constantly shuffled around feel about that. You know, maybe instead of a lack of an urgency, maybe it's that, you know, I don't know. I mean, for example, they put Campbell in center the other day and he took a horrible route to a ball, by the way, and it fooled the cameraman. And then Duran was camped under it, no problem. And I'm like, man, was that just a bad route? Like that clearly like a lack of experience. I don't know if you saw the play. It was on the Nesson broadcast, but you know, messing around with him. And then when he's training at first base. He's not training where he's playing at second base or center field. So it's just super inconsistent. And I understand that we've got issues at first base. I do. I do also think we could solve it, but it just in the thing that it's like, well, I want to get, you know, I know Romy's hurt, but I want to get Romy at bats today. Well, what are we doing? Why is that the case? If a guy's rolling and he's healthy, let him roll. It's just, again, he's managing for all 162. You keep managing this way, Alex. And by the way, I'm an Alex guy. You keep managing this way. Game 120, 162 aren't going to matter. Because we're going to be out of it. Or we're going to be chasing the tail of the Royals or whoever else is in the slots ahead of us. And then it's all dependent on how they play and not just on how you play. Win now, win tomorrow. The crochet thing drove me nuts. It was a clearly, we're not focused on winning today move. When that's a chance to sweep a good team, build momentum going into the 4-game set against the Orioles, you know, and I hate to say it, but like, My cousin who listens to our podcast, Casey, what's up? He told me like 2 days ago there was going to be a nor'easter tonight in Boston and they weren't going to play the game. And guess what happened? The game got blown out by whatever time this afternoon. you should have some feeling that you're not going to be playing the next day. You're telling me you're not looking at the weather the next day and lining things up? I mean, you have to know it's coming. 3 inches of rain. They were never going to play today. It seems like I don't know, man. And I like Cora. I'm just so frustrated with where we are because I feel like he's had a direct negative impact on recent performance.
You know, I don't see why. I don't understand why there has to be a date circled on the calendar on how this pitcher is going to be managed on that day. Because according to Chris Cotillo last night in a tweet thread, that's pretty much what happened. Before the season started, it was going to be a light day for Crochet. And why not do it when you put up a 7 spot after 2 innings? Then do it. Yeah, give him the rest of the night off. Rest him. Because then what he just did was essentially the same thing as a side session in between starts. Do it that way.
We haven't scored runs when he's pitched. It really hasn't allowed us to do that, at least in the recent future.
There might not be a great example for him, but I mean, they've all had opportunities. And then just skip his start then. Just bring somebody up and just skip the start. And then he'll have, 10 days off in between starts. Just do it that way. Don't
give him an extra day. Give him an extra day. Don't you have to skip the start? Just give him an extra day if that's what you want to do. But you're right, Terry. I agree with that take wholeheartedly. Have a feel for the particular game. You're up a touchdown to nothing. Go get Criswell to throw 2 or 3 innings. He gives up 3 runs, whatever. You're 7-3, whatever is the score. But you can pick your spots. That's a very good point. Now, on the side note, they don't score on the nights he pitches, but
yeah, he hasn't had a ton of run support. Hasn't won a game at Fenway yet. All of his wins were on the road,
which is insane with how well he's pitched.
But yeah, they just don't show up. Dobbins gets tons of run support. It's just weird how certain guys do and some don't. But another hole, and it's got to get addressed. The 4 spot in the lineup. A lot of days it's Abreu. Against lefties, it's Ref Snyder. And it's Ben Campbell at times. You're only getting a batting average of 171 and an on-base of 214 out of the 4 spot. That's brutal.
Brutal.
You need to make a move. If you're not going to bring the kids up, and I don't know what the holdup is now, but if you're not going to do it, you need to make a move.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense that we haven't made any moves. But I've always said that you're the Boston Red Sox. You should never hesitate to go outside the organization to improve the big league club, especially in a year where you have the talent to contend. You know, they have done really nothing but shuffle journeymen through there. Sogard's been okay. You know, he's made a couple of really nice plays defensively. He's been pretty smooth around the bag. It doesn't look like he's fighting the ball on one hoppers and stuff, but we're waiting on Romy Gonzalez to come back. Sogard, you know, Toro, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I wonder where we are with,
again, it's not a win now approach is really what I'm saying. I go back to my original point, your win now approach. And I'm not going to say it because I've said it a million times, but you move people around and you get the young guys up here and you fill out the lineup.
That's what needs to happen. And the easiest way to making that happen. And before I get there, so you've got Campbell working out at first, hasn't made a start yet. Meyer is playing second down in Worcester now. Anthony will have to play the outfield. I mean, there's no real moving him around there. I mean, it might be right field versus left field or vice versa, but he's an outfielder and it's going to stay that way. But if you get rid of Story, they all go back to their natural positions. Campbell goes to second, Meyer goes to short, and you're good. Nobody's getting messed with right now. And I don't get the argument for keeping Story. The bat is gone. It's just completely disappeared. He can't hit a 94-mile-an-hour fastball. And
which everybody has.
I mean, if you can't hit a fastball, what are you doing in the major league? And then the thing that slipped my mind for a second, he's got a -3 defensive run saved. Okay. He's not even a good defender anymore. Like, what is the basis for keeping him on this roster? I guess leadership, but how's that working out?
What if, and by the way, before I get to my point, we fake DL'd Houck. Yoshida was probably on the DL initially for a reason, but he's there in purgatory. I can't believe he's not healthy by now. Why can't you fake IL Story? Because here's my next point. I think John Henry says, not a chance. Are you cutting him? You're not doing that. I'm paying this guy $44 million over the next 2 years. I'm not eating that money. You got to get him something out of him. And then obviously it's going to come through Sam Kennedy to Breslow and to Cora, but that could be happening.
That is a distinct possibility. And if I was in the room with John Henry, I would say, well, that same guy is sabotaging your chances of winning, you know, on a nightly basis. And then you just spent $40 million a year on one player and it's canceling the other out. Like, that $40 million contract is going to be a waste of money if we can't get the rest of the lineup working.
What's it worth to Nesson, the gate, you know, the attendance, the tickets sold, burgers, dogs, beer, if they get to the ALCS? You think they make that money back, Terry?
I was just going to make that point. It's like Trevor Story's contract is expensive, but not getting the October money is, in a different way, very expensive.
So. Exactly. The lost revenue is insane. I mean, the fan base going back again. I mean, they got excited because of the offseason. People are hanging around because they feel like it could pop. But that fan base is going to recede back into the bushes if we're out of it in late August, early September. So it's forest for the trees. To answer part of Johnny's question, I hate John Henry as much as I hate anybody in professional sports. He's ruining my baseball team. He's holding us back. And you can lie through Sam Kennedy and send the message through Breslow, but I know it's you, John.
It does trace back to him, but there's just something slimy about Kennedy. I don't know what it is.
He's been caught in provable lies.
Second he opens his mouth, I just.
And it's so bad now that the minute he like sits down and he's at the press conference, I'm immediately skeptical.
Like, what are we lying about today?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We're a better team than this, and everything is just so self-inflicted. They're just not making organizationally smart decisions. Like, just get the kids up. If nothing else, get the kids up. Maybe we go on a run. On TikTok earlier, I gave a trade idea. And surprisingly, I'm not getting blown up by it like some of my other brilliant ideas, but Tanner Houck for Rhys Hoskins. The Brewers have a very good pitching program, so I think they would look at Tanner Houck and be like, we could turn him into something. And then the Red Sox, and there's been a million Rhys Hoskins trade packages out there. So I'm not saying, you know, I'm the first one to come up with that one, because I'm definitely not. But Rhys Hoskins, he solves your first base problem. He solves your righty lefty problem because he's a power righty. He is hitting about 300 right now.
On the nose.
He solves your four hole problem. It's just he solves so many problems, and they could go get him. I think he's making about $18 million a year, so I don't know if that pushes us into the next threshold, but a ton of money comes off the books. It would basically be a rental. They do have a mutual option for the following year, but there hasn't been a single mutual option picked up since like 2018. Usually one party opts not to do it, because in Hoskins' case, he might do it because it's going to be his last chance to really get a good deal. He's 32 years old. So, you know, he can get maybe a 3-year deal worth $60 million or something like that. I have no idea what his market would be, but somewhere in that neighborhood. And so I don't think he would want it. And Boris is his agent too, but man, he would rake. He's a righty. And that makes me wonder if we do get him, and there's going to be more momentum towards it as the deadline gets closer, but where he's a righty, I'd almost move Devers into the 3-hole and Bregman into the 2-hole. That way it would go Duran, Bregman, Devers, Hoskins. So lefty, righty, lefty, righty. It would be balanced. I mean, if it doesn't happen, not a big deal. Devers and Duran both hit righties, but lefties rather. Yeah, we're getting more stuff in here on the stream. John P. Ratcliffe, I was tweeting on him, not tweeting actually, it's on Facebook, but he was responding to that same trade proposal. Story at first base, at this point, it's worth a try. Yeah, I mean, we were kind of getting to that. Anything to keep Campbell at second, Meyer at short, and that does that. And Story's defense, I mean, he didn't get a guy out. Was that last night?
Yes.
He's got a noodle arm and just couldn't sling it. And, you know, the runner was safe and the inning kept going. And so I don't get why Trevor Story has to be here.
I mean, Story to first, you would think a major league shortstop could field the position. So I'm frankly not worried about that. Then you take his arm strength out of it by putting him at first, because he'd essentially be doing relays to home. From center field and right field into third base from right field potentially. So there's just not a lot of responsibility throwing the baseball, which is one of the reasons why I like Devers over there too. And it brings up Mayer, which obviously has all the upside that goes along with that. I'd like to bring in the next comment for my next point, which is GoPat says, have you seen Marcelo Mayer is only hitting around 260 in Worcester? What makes you believe he will hit better than Story? Well, one is he'll have a chance against hard throwing pitching. Story cannot get around on a mid 90s fastball, of which everyone has. And while Mayer may be cooled off in Worcester, his upside is tremendous. Now, that also comes with the fact that I don't think he's ever played more than 100 games in a year. He really has been hit by the injury bug. And last year, if you recall, he actually got shut down and didn't finish the year at all. So there is some concern that he's never been healthy for a full year. You bring him up, you put the pressure on him. If he breaks down, you might have to backtrack. Although there's other options, of course, with, you know, Rafael being able to play a plus shortstop. So, but getting back to John Ratcliffe, you could put Story at first. He still isn't going to hit. And that's the biggest issue here. And again, your first baseman is supposed to be a power guy.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But I think an average defender at shortstop is probably going to be better than Story at this point. And as far as Meyer coming up, like GoPats just said in the chat stream, I mean, maybe it sparks him. And somebody else pointed out in the stream a few nights ago, I think, maybe his presence up here will help Campbell. If one of his buddies gets called up, maybe it improves his focus. Maybe they collaborate a little bit. I don't know. But Campbell is just getting jerked all around the field, basically, on where he's playing. And he doesn't look great at the plate.
He's hitting.
Yeah. And so I just, that's what makes me wonder. I keep going back to, is there something going on between Cora and Breslow? Is Cora not cooperating with the lineup just to piss Breslow off? I mean, Devers should be at first by now. Whatever talk John Henry had with him in Kansas City almost a couple weeks ago, I just figured, okay, they had a conversation. He's going to first, but to appease Rafi, it's just gonna be a slower moving goal, you know, within the next couple of weeks, and then he'll start taking grounders, and then he'll go to first. But that hasn't happened yet. So is there a war over the lineup card? Is Breslow maybe not bringing these prospects up just to piss off Cora? I don't know. You spent $40 million on Alex Bregman, and you're sabotaging yourself in so many other ways. Nothing makes sense right now. Nothing's getting handled the right way.
Do you think it's possible that the organization, possibly at the direction of John Henry, has said you're not bringing these kids up this year? Essentially starting their clock at like next year? Because you keep him in the organization another year?
I mean, a month ago, I'd say that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. But a month later, nothing makes sense. So I would say that that's plausible.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I just have such a distrust with ownership, with ownership's puppet. And, you know, Cora got the extension. And so some of the sharp comments made towards the general manager and ownership stopped the minute that thing got signed. And this year he's pulling Crochet at 85 pitches in a game that's tied, and he's dominating, you know. I don't know.
Delfino just last night was speculating, well, maybe Campbell's up to try to get rookie of the year, which ain't going to happen. I mean, that Oakland kid, Jacob Wilson, is like hitting like 340 right now with plenty of pop. So if he,
why would that be important? Why would Campbell winning rookie of the year be important?
Because we get an extra draft pick, basically. So for a nerdy front office, that's kind of a big deal. But
that's dumb. But
I know, but that could be why you hold Anthony back a year so he can win it next year. And I don't think
if he wins it, we get a draft pick. If he doesn't, you delayed his entry into the big league club while simultaneously cutting yourself at the knees for 2025. Boy, yeah. Do I hope that's not accurate. If that comes out and that's real, oh my God, that is ridiculous.
That's what Delfino was talking about. And again, I mean, we're just trying to make sense out of something that makes absolutely no sense. So
no, I get it. Nothing against Jim. That's not what I meant. I mean, if that's what the nerds are doing, if that's what the nerds are telling the ownership of the Red Sox to do, that is just, that's a problem.
You know, I'm just constantly wrestling in my head with the dynamics of the organization, and I can't like be furious at Breslow because he has improved the pitching infrastructure. Like, we're getting young arms up and they've shown some promise. We don't know where the ceiling is and what their roles could be in July, August, September, but we're starting to see something we've really not seen before. You know, in the Epstein era, Sherrington, Dombrowski, we never developed pitching. John Lester was the only one. And so, well, Buchholz too, I guess, but he was injured half the time, but it just wasn't a thing. So now you're finally starting to see it. And so I do appreciate that aspect of the Breslow hiring, but he just seems so inept in everything else. And Zach Scott is just sitting out there and there's no momentum. There's never been a rumor. I don't even know if he even wants to do it, but he's got so much familiarity with the organization and seems to be a smart executive. Like, that would be my pivot if anything had to happen, or if Cora just gets tossed. I don't know, but.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, and I think Breslow is going to get at least 3 or 4 years. And I'm not a Breslow guy, but the talent on the field in 2025 should not dictate a under .500 result. This team should be 6-8 games over .500 with the talent. with a guy like Crochet who goes out and has been absolutely awesome. Adding Bregman, like, I know the lineup's not perfect, but it's good enough this time in the year where they should be farther along. And that comes down to the players and the coaches in the dugout. So I think Breslow gave them enough to be competitive for the first 100 games of the year. And we're barely, if we're barely competitive. So I don't blame Breslow for our problems. I don't. You know, some of what goes on between ownership through Sam Kennedy, through Breslow, I don't love. I don't trust Breslow at the deadline, obviously. But he, you know, with Theo's help getting Bregman, they handed enough tools to Alex to put it together.
Yeah, this is the second best roster he's ever had, basically. And with Breslow, I mean, I think he did. It was an honest effort over the winter, but the in-season operational moves day-to-day, week-to-week just haven't been great, as we've outlined. So I don't – I mean, if they DFA'd Story or whatever, traded him, I don't think you can, but
– fake IL.
If he's gone, at least it's a step in the right direction. I can tolerate Meyer or Anthony coming up and flaming out on their first try and having to go back to Worcester. I can tolerate that, but – to have one of the worst players in Major League Baseball at this point blocking them, I can't tolerate that. It drives me nuts. And first base is the easiest position to resolve. And they can't even do that. You're using utility middle infielders to fill that role.
Well, Terry, in my opinion, you're hyper-focused on Story. So if you move Story to first, then Campbell stays at second. Mayer comes up and plays shortstop. But we haven't talked about getting Roman Anthony on the big league club. I agree with it. But it doesn't get Roman Anthony to Boston.
No, not necessarily. I mean, you'd have to maybe make Rafaela your super utility guy in order to facilitate that, but I don't see why you couldn't. And by the way, no one's mentioned this, but he played a pretty good second base last year in a handful of tries, played shortstop as well. Wasn't quite as good on that side of the diamond, but maybe, well, actually, but that would, you know, it would work. No, it would work. So put Campbell at first, Rafaela at second, Meyer at short, and then Anthony, wherever you want to put him in the outfield at that point. Because, I mean, you can put Duran in center if you want to. I mean, he's been fine there in previous games. I don't think he's played there this year yet, but he played there a bunch last year. And then Anthony goes to right, or left rather. I think that could happen. I mean, it's viable is what I mean.
I mean, I don't know, man. We're coming up with so many different combinations. I'm not sure that I can keep him straight.
That's what we do every day. Every Red Sox fan is doing constant gymnastics in their head to find the perfect alignment, and we never do.
Look, if you could add a power bat to the outfield, it's just obvious to me that Rafaela does become your super utility guy. There's no reason for him to play corner outfield because he's always going to be your center fielder, but he can play any position in the outfield. He's more than capable at second. I think he's a plus defender at short. I think he could play third. Hell, I think he could play first. He's the best athlete on the team, you know. He's an incredible athlete. I don't know that you want to do that to him, but he does create a lot of flexibility if he's not in the starting lineup.
You could
slide Devers to center and put Roman Anthony at left, and your super utility guy's locked up for the next 6 years. But you know, injuries happen. These things have a way of resolving themselves. And instead of moving people around, if something does happen, you just plug Rafaela there. I mean, I think that's certainly a possibility.
Here's another weird one, and it won't happen, but Duran came up as a second baseman. Okay, that's where he was until basically he was about ready to be called up. They had to convert him into an outfielder. Now, I'm not saying to put him at second, but if he can play second, he can play first. So I'm just, it's weird. I know. I'm just trying to make it fit, but
we got to get a spreadsheet going here. I mean, look, the one thing you could say about that is if you do put Duran at first, you lessen the wear and tear he puts himself on, you know, puts on his body because of how aggressively he plays. You might be able to keep him healthier, fresher for the end of the season. I don't know that I'd mess with Duran, man. I don't know.
I don't know either. He's 6'1", if anyone's wondering. I don't know why height matters at first base anymore.
I don't doubt that if Cora went to him and asked him to do it, that he would do what's best for the club. I feel pretty convinced of that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that either. And he's in a weird spot because he was such a late bloomer, so he's not going to be a free agent until age 32. So he's never going to get that 8-year deal that all these other guys will have a shot at. So, but I don't know. Just anything that gets Anthony up. I think Anthony, even though Meyer is the best fit right now, he's the easiest plug-and-play guy that's still on the farm. I think Anthony's the guy that's going to be the beast, though. He is a lefty, but he hits lefties better than righties. He's got reverse splits, but he hits righties very well. He hits both sides very well. So I just feel like that's the move. And maybe he goes right into the four hole and that becomes a solution. I don't know. I mean, it didn't work for Campbell, but
a lot of pressure. Your first, you know, you come up, your first job, you're a highly touted top prospect in all of baseball. You put him right in the middle of the lineup and, you know, he has that much control over whether we win or lose. I'm not saying he can't handle it because every time he goes up the organization, he's continued to hit. Just a lot of pressure. Campbell has not responded well to that move. So.
No. All right. Well, we can kick around scenarios all night, but I think we've done it enough for tonight. Double header on Friday. Actually, let's see if the pitching stuff's been updated. So we have on Friday, wow, they're going to go with two actual starters, no call-ups. So Brian Bayo in the afternoon game against Cade Povich, who has not been pitching well. So, but it's a day game, and we know how – why did they do that then? Why didn't they put Bayo at night? But they got Giolito at night, so he's facing to be determined according to the site. So Baltimore probably will have to call someone up. And then just for the hell of it, the rest of the weekend on Saturday, you got Zach Eflin versus Hunter Dobbins. That should be a pretty fun game. And then on Sunday, Dean Kramer versus Walker Buehler. Every single one of these listed Baltimore guys has an ERA of 5-something. So this should be, if your offense can't find it in this series, oh my goodness. So we'll see. But everyone, we'll be back tomorrow night. Take care.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.